I think I know everybody, in the Dirt Zendo at least. My name is Coral. I took Jukai at Brightway in 2019, so I've been here for a little bit, but not as long as some folks. I think Brightway was started in 2011, and there's are some people who are still attending from that time, so that's cool. I've held a few volunteer responsibilities, but right now I am sacristan, which means I help Domio put on the ceremonies throughout the year. And if that's something that you're interested in learning about or helping me with or making that a part of your practice, just let me or Domio know. We'd love to have you help. I also am greeter on Tuesday nights a lot, and I take care of the plants on our altars. So all the flowering plants, I come in and take care of them. It's kind of a sad time of year. All the orchids are falling off the plants, all the orchid blooms. Just kind of hanging on with this one blooming plant right now. So that's what I do inside of Brightway. Outside of Brightway, I am a civil engineer. I work for the City of Hillsborough Public Works in storm and sanitaries, so stormwater treatment and wastewater conveyance, pipes and manholes and stuff. And I became an engineer because I wanted to dedicate my life to the environment. But the most gratifying thing about this, my position, is the co serving a community and fostering a community. And I recently became a supervisor of somebody, and the cultivating the team and make, serving the community is what I like, really love to do. And I think that's interesting that that's kind of the same for my experience at Brightway as well. And I'm getting into this much detail on purpose because it's relevant to the rest of my discussion. But so I'm talking about self study of self to date. But before I get into it, I did something different for this talk for me. And I decided to wait till the last minute to put this together. For better or worse, this is kind of like a stream of consciousness talk. And the reason why I did this is because, well, first of all, I've been inspired by other people who have done the Sangha Voices talks so far. They've been really open and honest, and people have been really good at putting things into their own words. And I realized that my previous talks were very data driven and peer reviewed and like something if you would expect from an engineer. But maybe not as fruitful for a Song of Voices talk. So anyway, I wanted to learn more about my personal experience with this topic and get things into my own words. So I tried that. I think it's still very engineering because that's who I am. I like poetry, and I love when I can see the Sangha members connecting to Zen teachings through poetry, but that's just not how my brain works. So I'm giving this talk from the laboratory of my mind, and I encourage you to be scientists in your own life. And I invite you to think about how you've been trained to present yourself and to learn, and how that might affect your practice. So, with that in mind, I want to talk a little bit of how I approach this topic as an engineer. So, I did 4 years, well, 6 years, because I'm a slow learner, 6 years of these kind of difficult, hard to grasp scientific classes like thermodynamics and fluid mechanics and chemistry and biology. And when you graduate and you become an engineer, you don't really use any of that. It's important in the background, but you're really applying what you've learned. And so in storm and sanitary engineering, the application is water flows downhill. And that's it. I mean, it's just like brass tacks. And so I love, to talk about, these difficult, kind of hard to grasp concepts in Zen, but what's like the brass tack like application of that? And so when you think about no self or anatta, it's just like impossible to describe. Language doesn't come close to describing it well at all, and it's not easy to grasp. But the first step of realizing no self is to study the self. And so I think self-study is the application of no self. So if we can kind of approach it from that perspective as I move through this. I thought I would talk about no self for a second, just in case you're not familiar with the concept. Holding on to the idea that you have an inherent enduring self nature is the primary cause of suffering. And like almost everything hinges on this. And the self isn't just I'm Coral and I have these neuroses and proclivities. It includes your roles and your relationships, your values, your opinions. It's just like a mass of things, everything. And from a very young age, your brain is starting to make the story to make sense of the world. And in Domio's book, she talks about from the very first time you were hungry or felt a sensation, like I'm cold, the idea started to form in your mind that there was a you and it was separate, some way separate from the rest of the world. And your belief in self makes life difficult because it requires you to interpret everything you encounter in terms of yourself. How am I doing? Do I have what I need? Is this a threat or an opportunity for me? What does this person think of me? And the misery of I, me, and mine is the endless work that you do on behalf of the self, protecting it, maintaining it, competing, defining, strengthening, and identifying threats. You do all this work for the things that the self identifies with or feels ownership of, like those things I mentioned, opinions and possessions, etc. And if you're listening to me, I just decided to throw this caveat in. If you're listening to me and you say, well, I'm not always saying how am I doing, or this is a threat to me, I'm constantly thinking, how are they doing? You know, do they have what they need? And I just want to say, because I'm also a people pleaser, that people pleasing is also a form of self-preservation. Wherever that came from, it's still self-preservation, okay? And when you think about this, you realize that your entire life has been spent in the service of this self that you think you have. And the self is sensitive. If you can think of like a really insecure person you might know, and they're like lashing out all the time because they're feeling threatened, right? And then that's kind of like what the self does. And it makes me think that everyone must be a lot closer to realizing no self than we realize. Why else would be so threatened by anything that challenges it? If it was such a solid entity as we believe it to be, why is it threatened so often? And the threatened self looks like someone, you know, lashing out because you're threatening their worldviews. So we all know the quote that Dogen says, to study the self is to forget the self, meaning in order to forget the self or realize the reality of no self, you must study it first. And like I said, I think I mentioned this in my little blurb that went out in the newsletter about my talk, but you must have something fully in hand to give it away. Skipping to the forgetting the self part of that Dogen quote is what I would consider spiritual bypassing. I don't think it's possible. I don't think that you can be successful in skipping self-study. So that's all I'm going to say about no self, because it is clearly an entire talk all on its own, if not an entire series. But if you want to learn more, there's a section in Domio's book that is available online. Podcasts are available, both in audio and transcript, if you want to read or listen to those. And also, we have been recording Tuesday and Sunday talks for quite some time. So if you go on our Brightway website, and you can just scroll back quite a few years, and there are multiple talks on no self that you can find. So, my practice of self-study and how it's gone. The word study was is somewhat of a misnomer, and I really struggled with that. I wanted to turn it into coursework. And I really over-intellectualized it. And I'm sure I still do. And this is such a common hang-up in anything in Buddhism, which is why we have the whole finger pointing at the moon lesson, where the finger, the hand pointing at the moon is the teachings, right? And it's kind of like wanting to play basketball and reading about the sport and knowing all the stats and writing a poem about the ball, but never actually playing basketball, the actually doing it, right? So I spent hours doing this. I spent so much time intellectualizing, and I was getting caught up into turning this into coursework. But the study of self is not intellectual. It's not about sitting around thinking about your life or analyzing your neuroses or trying to figure out where they came from. It's not about philosophizing or reading. So instead, I think the word to study the self in that Gendro Koan, is obviously a choice someone made when translating. So I think to say to become familiar with the self is equally as appropriate, and maybe will get break you out of the like intellectual study mindset if you're also dealing with it like me. So some ways to study the self. Zazen. So sitting zazen or silent meditation. And granted, like I said, you're not supposed to really sit zazen and sit there and think about yourself, or overdo that, because that's not the intention we set when we sit zazen. But it is a very radical way to get to know the self. These things kind of just come up organically that you have to look at. And we're pretty much going cold turkey and removing all the ways we might shield ourselves from things that come up, knowing the self or defending the self. We just sit there and, we're I like to bring up, the scientist, we're just observing. With no judgment. So I'd like to invite you to think about some activities or behavior that you might do outside of Zazen to distract yourself from the self or what's going on deep down. For example, I really like to keep myself really, really busy. I have endless unfinished projects to keep my mind occupied. And, focused away from what might be going on. And I just want to take this opportunity to re really encourage you, if you're interested in this, in retreats and session. It's a crash course in self-study. I really, really recommend it if that's, part of your practice. So, when we get off the cushion, can we do the same thing and be an observer or a scientist or, play around in the laboratory of our own mind? So, in my personal experience, this concept of self-study seems so concrete and well-rounded in the Zendo. And it seems to dissolve as soon as I leave this place. When I'm in the Zendo, I can observe my habits and the habits of others without judgment. I can sit zazen and I can be present, and that's Zendo quarrel. But outside of Bright Way, it's not Zendo quarrel. It's somebody else, and I've been working a long time to figure out how to integrate this and be one person. So, how do you apply what you've cultivated on the cushion and apply it to your everyday life? One of the things that I'd like to mention is the four foundations of mindfulness. And again, that is a talk all on its own, but I'll go over it quickly. The four foundations, the first one is contemplation of body. So, how physically, how does the body feel? Contemplation of feeling. Not complex emotions, but it's just really simple, pleasant, neutral, or painful. The third is contemplation of mind. So that's just observing your states of mind. And contemplation of Dhamma. And this is things related to Buddhist teaching, the five hindrances, the skandhas, etc. And so this is it, I can't say that I've done this successfully myself, but it is a way to kind of bring mindfulness into your daily activities. Another thing that comes to mind is Nyoho, kind of this ever-present mindfulness. Again, so many Dharma talks, there's podcasts, there's so many opportunities for you to learn about these things if you're interested. But keep so throughout the day, we're not getting caught up in the details, but observing carefully. What do we think? What do we feel? What triggers us? When do we feel small and defensive? And when do we feel relaxed? Why do we feel what we feel? And what do we fear? We just cultivate awareness of what's going on in our lives, and we build a habit of being familiar with our own living. And it's so much easier said than done. And, at this point in my practice, I'm finding times in my daily life where I can point and say, ah, here it is. There's the self. And I don't say, okay, time to go away, self, or push it down, like I used to. I used to do that. Again, when this happens, it's just an opportunity to observe. So if you struggle with the negative self-talk or the self-judgment, like I do, I have some tips. These are some things that I've worked with, because I do ask myself questions. Why am I practicing if I can't get the suffering to go away? Or why or how is not my practice not helping me with this yet? And the first thing I did was I read Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. It's a really good book. And I picked up this tip that she brought up very early on in the book, where you notice something. And I read this book a long time ago. I should have looked at it again, but I think that I may be using it in a little like altered way than she had mentioned it. But when I notice something, I am frustrated with this situation. I say, yes. I'm angry at that person. Yes. And I just replace whatever judgment or whatever crappy thing I was going to say to myself with, yes. And I try to mean it, fake it till you make it kind of thing. And I think it can go as deep as, I'm doing the dishes. Yes. And the book goes into more detail, but that's just how I use that technique to observe without judgment. Another thing that I do, and I'm not sure where I picked this up, and maybe I, anyway, when I feel anger or frustration with myself, I often think about if I were a dear friend or someone I really loved, if they were coming to me with this, what would I do for them? I'd hold a space for them. Advice always isn't appropriate. And you just embrace and hold space for them, and then you can do that for yourself. And in the beginning, it feels a little bit like mental gymnastics, but it can work. And after some time, those things will fall away, these judgments and these observations, and you can just observe. So, I have a lot of examples of these times where I'm what is going on? I'm not doing things right. I have these self-judgments, getting upset with friends or getting offended at work. But I want to talk about an example from my life when I experienced loss, because I think everyone has experienced loss in one form or another. And I chose one that maybe I won't cry in front of you all to talk about. I lost my dog last year and we had to put her down. And it was intense and I was a wreck for a really long time. And after, I was asking myself, is this the self-causing suffering? Am I not supposed to be sad that my dog died? And after some contemplation, I realized it was the self. It became clear to me that my dog and my relationship to my dog was a part of who I was. Her loss was disorienting to me because I lost a part of myself. And losing a part of yourself is jarring, but this is humanity and we are humans. And there would be no Buddhas without sentient beings. It's not a bad thing to have a self. We are not tainted with it. I do want to go into breakouts, but I have some other, another more things to say before that happens. I just have kind of like a short list of some really practical kind of self-study things that you could do. And I want to give a plug for the fall term student program that I mentioned at announcements. So at the very beginning, in their opening retreat, you present a karmic or spiritual outline. And on the website, it says, I'm just going to read what the website says. It's a list of events or circumstances that have marked you in some way and have contributed in making you who you are. These can be specific things like alcoholic parents, or more general, like growing up in the country near a lake. So, one of the reasons why you do this. You look at your karmic outline or your spiritual outline is so you can truly understand this karmic package that you've been carrying around with you through this life. And it's a sweet opportunity to get to know yourself better and honestly to get to know the Sangha members on a deeper level. So I really recommend that. Precept study. We go over precepts every spring is another study of self. So these self-preservation techniques that you might become familiar with through practice, they often cause bad behaviors and cause us to break the precepts and be damaging to ourselves and maybe others. And we've also completed other exercises like a few years ago, we all took the Enneagram test and presented our findings and talked to each other about that. And it's a really fun tool. And the tests are really flawed, but if you can identify what type you are, you can go on the website and learn all about it and kind of see all the different kind of behaviors that that type can manifest based on, how well you're doing. Maybe, if you're having a hard time, you might manifest these certain behaviors. And like I said, those are available on those classes that Jomi led on the Enneagram are available on our website if you're interested in learning more about that. And but I do want to say it's important that these last couple of things are just small tools and don't get too wrapped up in these. Because you can, it's just so easy to go down that path of over-intellectualization. And lastly, in the process of becoming familiar with the self, this is kind of like my wrap-up conclusion statement. So, in the process of becoming familiar with the self, we need to face some shit we may not want to look at. This can be really difficult. There are reasons why we have these behaviors to distract ourselves. And we probably need a fair amount of healing and acceptance. Getting to know the self can't really be completed until our heavy, twisted karma is nurtured and healed. So it's a lifelong practice. I'd like to get us into groups, probably three or four. I guess four in the Zendo would make sense. And I want to discuss, what does your self-study look like? If you have, if that's a part of your life, and if you it's not a part of your life, or you don't have any kind of practice set, is there anything you'd like to try? Maybe something I discussed today, or if you have any ideas of things that you would like to try. So I think 15 minutes will be good, and then we can come back and talk, and I hope we can have some things to discuss. So, yeah. You want to turn it off or what? No? Okay. Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Freeform.
Freeform. Sorry. Was that 15 minutes?
Yes, Mark, thanks.
Sorry, I was tinkering with the breakout room panel.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope.
I think she wants to stay there so she can speak a closed caption.
Oh, does anybody have anything they want to share from their groups or Jinryu?
Yes, it's a question. I'm not sharing.
Okay.
But we did talk at the very last minute in our group, and that was, when did we do the Enneagram
What is that?
discussion and testing as an entire community, or was that in a special group?
So Yoli was asking what the Enneagram is, and it's a personality test. So there's, I think there's nine personalities, one through nine, and you get one, and it describes your personality. It's a lot like the Myers-Briggs
Yeah, because
thing.
needs nine, the group of nine. Yes, that was in my word thing of the day.
Oh, okay. So yeah, we did that as a everybody did it. We did a studying the self series a few years ago. I think it was like 2022.
I vaguely remember that, and I'm gonna check it out on the website. Thank you.
Does anybody want to share what they talked about in their group? Yeah, Leah.
Yeah, so hi, Leah, Enneagram Type 4. How's it going? I learned that here. We talked about a lot, and conversations led a lot of ways. But in general, I came in kind of guns blazing, going, I don't want to talk about myself. Because I just feel like I spend a lot of time thinking about myself. And the whole point, not the whole point, but one of the things that brings me to Zen Buddhist practice is I don't want to think about myself anymore. I don't want to talk about myself anymore. I don't want to think about it anymore. And then to my horror, when we had the term student program, I'm like, I got to talk about myself. And I listened to everybody else talk all about themselves. And I was just like, this ego party, I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. So I'm very resistant to this. I'm just honest. I just.
Yeah, I don't like it either, actually. Believe it or not, I'm not into it, and I think there's a lot of resistance for me. I think there's a lot of fear of getting too deep for me, and after the first time I did the term student program, I didn't come back after the karmic timeline thing. I had like such a bad vulnerability hangover. I just like didn't I hated it. And so that's why I hate it. I can't even be vulnerable with myself. Like that's a struggle that I face with this self-study things. But Domio says, like hopefully, you can be fascinated by yourself. And that's why I kind of brought up the like if you can approach it with this scientist's mindset and kind of like a play sandbox mindset, it might be a little easier, go down a little easier.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I think it's a process for people. And some people have a lot of, barriers there where it's just like, no, I don't want to do this. So I think I'm already very, have way too big of an ego and way too into myself. So I'm just going to leave it there.
Thank you. Yeah, Zen.
Something that we've talked about that I didn't think about was hobbies. I don't know, to me, I was like, well, I do med like I meditate sometimes and I do therapy and I read books that are self-help books. Maybe that's it. But I didn't even think about like doing things I like for fun. So that's a good one.
Yeah, interesting. And I like that you brought up therapy because that is another wonderful way to get to know yourself. You do not need to be in a, crazy, terrible situation to go to counseling and learn about yourself. And it is something that Domio has brought up in self-study, that that's a wonderful way to kind of open that world up for you. Sure.
So in our group, we talked a little about like we're not sure if there even is a self, like Judith was saying. You weren't sure if there is a self, like what exactly would it be? And I was just saying that with my Zen practice, I feel like I've kind of let go of the idea that there's a self, but kind of replace it more with the idea that I have a karmic package, right? I have like all these things that are affecting me, and some of them are in my control, a lot of them are not. It's just sort of like you were saying, if you look at it scientifically, it's like here are all these things interacting with each other. So that, and the funny thing about that is when I start thinking about myself as having a self, I looked at it as a karmic package, I actually became a lot more compassionate towards whatever I am. I was like, wow, look at all this stuff, like no wonder I did that.
I love that. Thanks, Erica.
Yeah.
Thank
you. I don't know. I do want to say that, I didn't focus very long on, what happens after you study the self, after you've been doing this for a really long time, and that's it starts to fall away. All, this inherent self, you start to see it for what it really is. Apparently, that's what's supposed to happen. It hasn't happened. I mean, I'm sure there's parts of it that have happened for me, allegedly. The self falls away and you forget about it. Okay, Eric.
What Coral just said is kind of what inspired me to say this. I do agree that the experience of the self falling away is not only very beneficial, but it, for me, I'm only speaking for me, the way I was telling my group when I was going through last year, a friend told me, instead of feeling as though I shouldn't feel a certain way, I shouldn't feel, this being selfish to be anxious or being, focusing on my own problems. He is a chaplain with the Korean version of Zen. I forget the exact name of it, if anyone knows, but he was saying to that I should instead accept it and sit in it and not reject it. And I've taken that as a mantra, basically. And what it has led me to do is, and I'm not good at this during times that are not really hard yet, I'm working on getting better at that, but is to approach everything I do as though it was practice. So that if I'm, especially like during a hard time, if I'm dealing with an issue that is difficult or causing me anxiety or frustration, but then once I got through some of the hard times, I began, okay, well, how can I practice doing this teaching? How can I practice doing this paperwork? How can I practice having this meeting? And then that has really kind of led me to the place where I am now, where I feel like aversion is actually more damaging than action. And in many cases, not having aversion will prevent negative action from occurring because I started using the no aversion not only during anxiety and frustration, but during any sort of judgment. And it started off with self-judgment, which is negative self-talk and self-sabotage. But then I have seen it has grown and expanded to any sort of judgment. And it's allowed my consciousness and my mind to open up more and begin to see how much judgment, and I use the lower J, not just capital J, but lower J also, we use in our everyday life. And the more we do not operate in aversion, I think the more the self can fall away because we're not creating a place out of a good reason for the ego to hide. And I think this happens a lot in aversion is we think because I'm averse to this thing, because I shouldn't be doing it, that I'm doing the right thing, but it's actually still a judgment. It's actually still an attachment. It's just a, it's, it allows us to feel good about that we're pushing away this anxiety or pushing away these things, when in reality, if we would sit and accept them and do our self-work, that's how we actually get over them rather than continuing to have to deal with them and keep pushing them away. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, Jinryu.
I was just going to say a tiny thing, and we only have a minute left. I don't know if this will be helpful, but I think part of the no, I can't go there feelings we have around studying the self is because there is a strong possibility that we will find ugly stuff, really ugly stuff that we don't want to admit is there, that we didn't know was there, that we refuse to believe is there, blah, 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 blah. And I got lucky a long time ago, in the first of many relationships I had with a therapist, but she caught me on something that I was telling her about that I had done. And she really called me on it. And I was shocked. And I was hurt, and I was crying, of course. You always cry in therapy, or at least I do. And she said, "Wait a minute." She says, "Is this the first time you figured out that you've done something despicable?" Had to laugh at, okay. Yeah, I can be despicable. Yeah, I can do that. And then it makes finding out about your anger or your selfishness or your pettiness or your to name the defect is doesn't have quite the sting as it used to. We're not all the same, but we are not unique, if you know what I mean. Somebody else out there does despicable stuff too. I just know it.
Isaac's raising his hand. Thank you, Jinryu. We're at time, so we offer the merit of the Sangha meeting to all so they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks, Coral.
Thank you, Coral. All right.